that happens in life can happen in a show. You can make them laugh, you can make them cry. Anything, anything can go.
Welcome to your weekend. This is Weekend Showcase, your North State Arts Magazine. I'm Tom Kinney. Today we talk with members of a group that put together an unusual multifaceted exhibit now at CSU Chico. The project is titled Vanished, a Chronicle of Loss and Discovery Across 500,000 Years. From several different perspectives, the project examines icons from Northern California which have vanished, yet still remain in our consciousness. The vanished subjects include the massive, majestic Hooker Oak, which used to be a famous feature of Chico's Bidwell Park. The famous Ishi, who was the last living member of his indigenous tribe in the North State. A huge tooth from a prehistoric woolly mammoth that was found near Oroville, but has since disintegrated. And a mighty volcano, which was near Mount Lassen, but is now extinct. The team that got together and created this unusual exhibition includes a photographer, two artists, two poets, a philosopher, and a volcanologist. Members of that team of creators will tell us all about this unusual project. That's coming up over the next half hour here on Weekend Showcase. Stay tuned. First, here's Brian Mall with the North State Arts Calendar.
The Shasta College Art Gallery features the exhibit Surface and Structure, Textile Sculptures by Trish Ramsey. The gallery's open Monday through Thursday between 8 a.m. and 6 p.m. Monday and Wednesday, it stays open till 9, and Friday till noon. At the Orland Art Center, Talent Times 3, paintings by a trio of women showing a mixture of landscapes, Western scenes, and florals. Center hours, 1 to 6, Tuesday through Saturday. In Chico, the Blue Room Theater opens Reservoir Dolls, an all-female take on Quentin Tarantino's indie film classic. Showtimes are tonight at 7:30 and tomorrow at 7:30. Coming up at Chico State's Wismer Theater, the Tony-winning play Dancing at Lugnasa. Set in Ireland in the summer of 1936, it's a tale of five unmarried sisters dealing with changes in their lives. Performances begin at 7:30. The run starts Wednesday and continues through next week. Tomorrow night at CSU Chico's Laxon Auditorium, Momix. This troupe of illusionist dancers perform Opus Cactus, creating dynamic images of the American Southwest. Explore the splendors of the desert, including slithering snakes and fire dances, starting at 7:30. Also tomorrow at Chico State's Harlan Adams Theater, the CSU Chamber Singers, the University Chorus, and the Acapella Choir take a sacred sojourn in their concert, Pilgrimage. Their musical journey starts at 7:30. Sunday at the university's Zing Recital Hall, the Lysander Piano Trio. These former students of the Juilliard School play selections by Debussy and Brahms in their concert, Young Trailblazers. The music begins at 2 o'clock. The Janet Turner Print Museum at Chico State hosts The Meaning of Life, Visual Anthology. Contemplate the meaning of life at this exhibit of art prints and text. The Turners open 11 a.m. to 4 p.m., Monday through Saturday. Today, the Chico Arts Center opens its latest exhibit, Dia de los Muertos. With artwork, altars, and poetry, this art show honors ancestors and loved ones who've passed over to the other side. Tonight at the center, there's an artist's reception and chili cook-off, starting just 2 hours from now at 5 o'clock and lasting till 7. At the Black Box Theater on Butte College's main campus, Urinetown. Only 3 more performances of this Tony-winning satiric musical, tonight and tomorrow at 7:30 and Sunday at 2. That's the calendar for this week. Today is the birthday of fashion expert Anna Wintour. The notion, Wintour pointed out, that a contemporary woman must look mannish in order to be taken seriously as a seeker of power is frankly dismaying. This is America, not Saudi Arabia.
Now let's join our visual art expert Dolores Mitchell. She's talking with several of the people who collaborated on an unusual and fascinating exhibit, now showing at CSU Chico.
I'm speaking with Kelly Lindner, the director of the Chico State University Jackie Headley Art Gallery, talking about a very exciting exhibition and series of events.
Vanished, a chronicle of loss and discovery across 500,000 years. Which involves 6 collaborators who are either working or have worked for the university before and have their own areas of research. They have merged into this really interesting exhibition that involves sculpture, writing, essays, photography, infographics, and volcanoes. The project is titled Vanished because it is discussing or looking at 4 different sites that have literally vanished in some sort of way, vanished from our memories, physically gone from a map. What these collaborators have come together to look at are how things are retained in our memory if they are no longer physically here, how we can look at something in a new way by reviewing what we have lost. The exhibition runs through December 15th, and we are going to be having an artist panel in the Performing Arts Center on the Chico State campus on Thursday, November 9th at 5:30 p.m. in the Performing Arts Center, room 134. A wonderful opportunity for everyone to hear directly from the artists and our project director, Byron Wolf, who was the instigator of this entire project. We are then going to continue after the artists give their discussion of the project with a reception in the gallery across in the Arts and Humanities building. The exhibition is going to be taking place in 3 different locations across the Chico State campus, in the Jackie Headley University Art Gallery, which is in the Arts and Humanities building. The exhibition continues in the lobby of the Valeen L. Smith Anthropology Museum, as well as in Special Collections, which is located in Merriam Library.
I'm going to be speaking with one of the participants, a poet, Heather Altfeld. Heather, what's your involvement in the project?
Well, actually, it was completely self-interested in the beginning. Byron Wolf was taking a small expedition up into the Ishi Wilderness. I did not want to be left out. My partner, Troy Jollimore, was going to be going, and I insisted on being included. I was brought up understanding some of Ishi's story from my mom, who was trained as an anthropologist. I just found the story of his wandering alone through the wilderness so interesting. The decimation of his tribe. I ended up writing, I think, 7 poems altogether. And I also became involved in the portion of the project which involves the hunt for understanding the life of the mammoth whose tooth we found in the Sycamore Diversion Dam.
Sherry Simons, who's sitting right next to me, has been working with that tooth.
I would like to say it's the ghost of the tooth. I wish we had actually found the real tooth. But with all of these sites that we're each working with, there's a kind of truth and myth. The tooth was actually discovered in, we think, 1999 by a CSUC class that was examining the diversion dam and sort of reading the geology, trying to understand the history of the rock. One of the students said they felt like they had found something that reminded them possibly of a tooth, and everyone discounted it. No, there's no possible tooth here. And then they did extract the tooth. and in the course of excitement and whatnot, it did disintegrate. The actual location of even the disintegrated parts of that tooth are forgotten, vanished, misplaced. But we as a group, the Vanished Collective, we kept on going back to the diversion dam, sort of looking and looking and looking. That tooth has really brought all of us this fascination with, you know, the history of the mammoth in our area. Probably in the back of our minds, we knew we'd never find the tooth, but we found so many other things that we weren't looking for. And so the tooth became this bit of a talisman for hunting and searching and the poetics of what you find instead.
I'm going to turn now to Troy Jollimore, who had direct contact with Byron Wolfe, an instigator of this project.
Byron really was the instigator. He talked to me early on when he was thinking about this, and at that point, it was such a vague notion, and in some ways has remained it. I mean, part of what's been so intriguing about this project is Byron's way of working. His idea from the very beginning, we sat down, I was so intrigued because he sort of said, I just want to get a bunch of people together and talk about these things. He had a list of, you know, six or seven Californian things, landscape, artifacts, people, you know, the mammoth tooth. And he had this vague sense that they were connected by this theme of they all were here and now are gone, but they've left these interesting traces in our culture and in our conversation. So let's do something with this. And that's essentially how he put it. You know, nothing more concrete than that. Just let's do something with this. Let's meet and have conversations and see what happens. Maybe nothing will come of this. You know, it's just this crazy idea.
And what actions did you take?
Eventually, in terms of, you know, concrete contributions and so on, the thing I ended up producing as part of the project was an essay about Ishii, but more than that, about Byron's re-photography work in connection with Ishii. We went on this little trip to the Ishii wilderness, and we found some of the spots where the very famous Ishii photographs were taken. One of the things that intrigued me about Byron's work is that he is a re-photographer. He tracks down these sites where famous photographs were taken. And he tries to, as much as he can, duplicate the conditions under which they were taken. He wants to take them at the same time of the year as the original, if possible. He wants to take them at the same time of day. And then you see, you know, you look at the picture and say, so what's different? Because, of course, many things have changed. In this case, with the Ishii photographs, we're talking about a time gap of about a century. It was about 100 years that the originals were taken. So a lot obviously had changed, and yet in this case, not as much as with many of the re-photographs that he's done. He took these photographs, and I got to watch him work. I got to observe the patience with which he has to locate these exact spots and then wait for the exact right time to take this picture and so on. It's like a kind of detective work, really, that he's engaged in. Watching him work, I was sitting there thinking, I really want to write about this. What he was doing, both in terms of, you know, the practicalities of it and in terms of the philosophical ramifications, you know, the themes he's exploring implicitly by doing this, are so fascinating. Really, the essay that I ended up writing, I think, was about that.
Sherry, when people come to the Jackie Headley University Art Gallery, where your work will be installed, what will they see?
Large mammoth-sized drawings. I've done a number of versions of parts of the mammoth, the tooth, maybe things the mammoth tooth might have seen, also a cross-section of the mammoth. The teeth that I've made or remade are all taken from drawings, prompts. Pretty much almost everybody in this interview room, as well as about 96 other people, have drawn their version of what they think a mammoth tooth looks like. I've built teeth based very loosely on their drawings using mixed media.
And Heather, you're willing to read one of your poems?
Yes. The poem is called Indian, Wild. This poem's about Ishii. Ishii had been living for approximately 3 years on his own in the hills ranging between Oroville and Mount Lassen. The bit about silence that's so important, I think, in this poem is that Ishii, after his family had largely been killed by white settlers throughout Butte Valley, he ended up having to spend 3 years completely alone, and he was really afraid of being caught by white settlers, so he did not make any noise at all. he could not light fires. He could not travel during the daytime. He mostly traveled far above where the white settlers lived in the valley.
So you could say that his voice vanished for 3 years.
It completely vanished. He lived in a great deal of fear, as did all of the indigenous people of this valley and elsewhere, of course, all throughout North America due to settlers and occupation. In this particular case, he had not only lost his own voice, but his language. I mean, he had his language, but the last indigenous speakers of his tribe had all died. And so he had no common language with indigenous people of the area. After he had been alone for so long, his health had begun to deteriorate. He was starving. He finally sort of surrendered himself at a slaughterhouse in Oroville, which no longer exists. And they didn't really know what to do with Ishi. He was billed by anthropologists as the last Stone Age Indian in America. They took him to jail because they couldn't figure out what to do with him. When he was logged into the jail register, he was logged in as Indian, wild. On the last night of the long concealment, as he walked beneath the bright moon, four sleeps down from the mountain, toward the prickle of lantern light in the valley, did he still stop to dust away his footprints, to sprinkle dried leaves over his steps? Did he crawl on his belly through the runway of rabbits and weasels rather than walk the wide berth of bears? Did he allow one small twig to surrender and break in the pitchy blackness, listening to its split dry sound? The creek he left behind in the darkness vowed to keep turning and tumbling in his absence. The boulders vowed to rest beneath the stars. The stars vowed to remain seated in their dark nests. The trees screened any shadow that might lean into their trunks. The wisps of smoke from each tiny fire he made against the rocks remained on the wind. Dragonflies rose in the blue afternoon when he arrived at the jailhouse, bent and worn, asking for nothing, or asking maybe for something. The pitch of one voice calling to another, that clattering of sound, a whole echo rising out from a throat, up into the uncertain particles of light.
Oh, that's very haunting. And you're going to be reading other poems as well as this one.
December 7th, I believe it's at 5:30. Troy and I will both be reading from our written work, poems and probably parts of our essays as well.
We're speaking by phone to Byron Wolfe, who is at the Tyler School of Art in Philadelphia. Byron is the project director of Vanished. Tell us about how you developed this idea.
The genesis of the project started sometime around 2007 or so. I had been making some photographs at Lassen National Park, tracking down and making new pictures in response to historic photographs made in 1870. It was a rather rigorous thing to find these locations, to hike back into them, and to make new photographs that somehow responded to the originals. At the same time, I had been thinking about a few other topics that were sort of geographically located in the Chico area. Those included things like the Hooker Oak, a tree that I had never seen, but I encountered it in the photographic record at the Special Collections in the library at the university, as well as photographs that I had seen about Ishi, the last Yahi, as the phrase goes. Of course, a Native American who lived in the region and appeared in Oroville in 1911. I also had been thinking a little bit about a newspaper article I read one morning about a mammoth molar that was discovered. And in fact, at the time that I read that, the mental image stuck in my head of what would it have looked like if the entire mammoth had been recovered surrounding that particular molar. The more I thought about historic photographs of Lassen, and the more I thought about how interesting it would be to try to respond to such things that had disappeared, the more I realized I didn't really have the full capacity to do it in the way that might be as interesting as it could be. I was not an expert on Ishii. I didn't know that much about the Hooker Oak. I didn't know anything about mammoths, and I barely even knew the geography of Bidwell Park at that time. Over a period of a couple of years, I started to think about who might be really interesting to work with to consider each of these individual topics. One of the first people I talked to was Troy Jollimore, who's a philosopher, but also a really interesting poet and writer. And I thought, wouldn't it be interesting to have a poet contemplate and kind of ruminate on what it might mean to be the last of a kind? One by one, people came on board until we were a crew of six people. They included Oliver Hutton, who is a designer, Heather Altfield, a writer, Sherry Simons, a sculptor, and Dr. Rachel Peasdale, a geologist or volcanologist. I should pause here because I forgot to mention an important point, and that is that those 19th century photographs of Lassen, part of what became interesting to me about them was I eventually came to learn several of them were made from the vantage point that would have placed them inside a volcano that was no longer on the site, Mount Tehama or Brokoff Volcano, as it's now called. Just that idea of standing in a location that used to be occupied by a massive volcano was just such an interesting mind twist. I had to explore it further.
How about the process of brainstorming and working together with this group?
I have collaborated as an artist for most of my career, which spans about 20 years, but I had never worked with a group this large or a group so diverse. When we started working collectively, we met weekly. In those weekly meetings that we all carved out of our schedules to commit to, we collectively explored each of these sites. We explored their history and what they meant. We had really wide-ranging conversations that kind of took us to unexpected places. Part of what I was particularly interested in doing was rethinking what these things were, what they meant. For example, for the Hooker Oak, I remember one day we spent the entire meeting, which was about an hour, trying to come up with as many questions as we possibly could to ask about the Hooker Oak and what it meant to people and how people experienced it, how it was part of an ecosystem, and how did other animals and organisms experience it. Part of what I was interested in was trying to learn how to ask interesting questions, some of which we answered, many of which we didn't answer. But out of that year of asking questions, I think that kind of gave us a shape and a scope of the project. But like most artists engaged in that kind of creative process, we really didn't know what we were getting ourselves into. We didn't really quite know what we were going to do or how we were going to do it. We didn't know what the final form was going to be. Was this going to be an exhibition? Was this going to be a book? We just didn't know. Ultimately, what we ended up doing was kind of pairing off so that we could work in small groups and kind of move forward on particular topics and particular ideas. We didn't really have a clear path. I think the first one we really kind of had any clear movement on was Ishii. We planned several trips into Deer Creek in order to investigate the original photographs of Ishii. And then little by little, everything kind of emerged and grew. And we, I made photographs and Sherry made some sculptures and essays were written. And everything started to take shape.
Byron, the second stage of this development involves communicating what you discovered to an audience and getting them involved. How did you go about that?
Well, in some ways, that's kind of the biggest challenge of being an artist and doing something that is expressive, and that is first identifying what it is that matters to you, then how do you communicate that to somebody. Some of the conversations between us were important in us figuring out what to talk about and what to show and how to even show it. I think one of the benefits of working in a collaboration is it allows for amplification of certain kinds of questions, of approaching work in ways that you might not otherwise approach it. In the case of our group, which is a fairly large collaboration, I would say, it allows us to work in small groups and then to share the work with a larger group and to get their perspective and feedback on it. But ultimately, a lot of times you don't quite know whether or not something connects with an audience until it is in that final place, that final venue.
Kelly was telling me about something that I know will connect with many people, and it has to do with a physical measurement of Hooker Oak in the gallery.
The Hooker Oak was a majestic tree, partly because of its scale and also because of how old people thought it was. One of the things that people refer to about it most were its vital statistics, how big it was, how tall it was. So large, it's very difficult in words and even in photographs to communicate the actual size of the tree. There was a sign that was hanging in the tree that recorded a lot of its vital statistics. One of the common statistics is that 8,000 people could stand under the tree at one time, allowing for 1 square foot per person. Oliver Hutton created a replica of that sign, which will be on display. But it's not just on display by itself, it's on display in the context of the tree, which has been printed on a mural at the scale of the tree itself. When you go to see the exhibition, you will see the tree reproduced at scale, so the trunk is 9 feet wide. I think it'll be a pretty interesting thing to encounter the tree at the size at which it actually existed.
Byron, this exhibition is not only interdisciplinary in terms of who is involved, but it involves such a wide array of types of work. So can you describe some of the things that people will be able to see when they come to see the exhibition?
The show consists of a lot of different types of work and experiences of different scale, of different media. So, for example, there are a number of really quite large prints, including the mural of the Hooker Oak. There are smaller photographs that are more of an intimate exploration of a specific geography. There are sculptural objects that Sherry Simons made as part of the investigation of the mammoth. There are sculptural objects that I made that were 3D prints derived from photographs or stands of photographs. There are giant postcards of the Hooker Oak. There are little tiny pictures of people in response to the Hooker Oak. There are maps. There's a fair amount of writing that explores many of these topics. There are large-scale panoramic photographs that have historic images embedded into them.
Byron, thank you so much for speaking with us, and we're looking forward to your artist panel and reception Thursday, November 9th, 5:30 p.m. in the Roland Taylor Hall, PAC 134. Followed by a gallery reception.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
And that's Weekend Showcase for this week. We'll be back next Friday at 3 o'clock. If you ever miss this program in its regular broadcast time, you can hear it online anytime after 3:30 Friday at mynspr.org. As always, we encourage you to enjoy the arts in the North State. For Weekend Showcase, I'm Tom Kinney. Weekend Showcase is a production of North State Public Radio.